April 5th, 2009, you are listening to the TFormers.com podcast. Hey, Iron High 1975's AKA Anthony here. Just a quick programming note. There will be no podcast next weekend because I will be out of town. So we will return with the, yes, April 12th. So we will be back on April 12th with all the news from the previous 2 weeks. Thank you for your understanding. And now on with the show. TFormers.com podcast. I'm your host, the Micronaut Iron High 1975. And joining me is, well, sorry, folks, he's back.
Yeah, sup, man?
Z Piper,
yeah, sup, man? How you doing?
Hey, what's going on?
Lots of fun news.
Lots and lots of news.
Yes.
Oh, it's been a crazy week for all of us here at the TFormers Ranch. So, even though the TFormers Ranch includes both Columbus and Pittsburgh, anyhow, we're here to provide you with the latest and greatest Transformers news to help guide you through your weary work week, in the hopes that one day every person will have a shiny job, every kid will have a shiny Transformer, and every Z Piper will have the masterpiece Optimus Prime.
Yes, one day.
So, on to brighter futures, movie news. Well, the biggest news this week, sarcasm dripping, is another stunning fanboy victory. The Fallen will be voiced by none other than Orson Welles from Beyond the Grave. Using audio from the 86 movies, as well as several other unnamed films, and not-so-jolly screen giant will return for one last performance. It wasn't a limitation on the dialogue, said director Michael Bay. The editing technology is such that we can make Orson sing Linkin Park. Let's hope it doesn't come to that.
Golly. Wow, that's not a joke, is it?
Megatron, no. Rosebud.
Exactly. Get a there'd be a lot of usable clips from the remake of Island of Dr. Moreau. Actually, no, wait, I'm thinking of somebody else. That's Marlon Brando. Forget that. Yeah. I got my overweight older actors confused.
Yeah, what's sad is that they were probably really skinny back in their younger days, and then just ballooned up to proportion enormous. Anyhow, well, this isn't a
Well, I shouldn't say no one, but you know, most people are not born fat.
I don't know. I've seen some pretty fat babies lately.
There are a lot of fat babies. Depends on if mom likes Twinkies, you know, a lot during the pregnancy, I guess.
Yeah. But this isn't the health podcast, but hey, guess what? April Fools.
See, it'd be kind of cool if that was kind of true, though. I mean, you'd really have to work on like the inflection, like the transition from one word to another so that it didn't sound like your typical soundboard crap, like, oh, my God, Optimus Prime, kill me now, please. You know, it's just
that was really well done. Good cheers, as they would say.
Yeah, I mean, so you'd have to work on getting the transition, you know, like since you're saying something in a breath. But I think it'd be kind of cool, you know, if that actually were reality.
Don't you need like an enormous amount of, you know, words spoken by the person to even begin to do that?
Dude, Orson Welles was in quite a lot of movies, and yeah. I mean, he had a fair amount of dialogue. The only problem is, you know, if you were pulling it from, I think he did. Oh, I'm not 100% sure, but I thought he did some radio as well, a decent amount of radio. So I'm sure it's out there, but you'd have to be careful because, you know, voices do change a bit over the years.
His voice got steadily a little bit deeper over the years, didn't it?
Yeah.
Anyhow, so that was the April Fool's joke for this week or this year, not this week. But needless to say, I don't think Orson Welles is going. They're going to be using Orson Welles for the voice of the Fallen. Although last week, as we reported on, you know, Nimoy being the voice of the Fallen, I think that would be cool if done right. So.
Oh, speaking of April Fools, this is not, you know, I don't think this was on the T-Formers site, but it's kind of in the same ballpark. You know, Blizzard, the game company Blizzard, right? That was WoW.
Yes.
You know?
World of Warcraft, which you're addicted to.
Exactly. So after the podcast, I'll show you this. But for those that are listening, you can hopefully go and find a link for it or whatnot. They had several April Fool's jokes, and one of which, because we all know that StarCraft II is coming out this year, and which is going to be awesome. And the April Fool's for StarCraft was a new Terran unit for Omega Supreme Defense. Basically, and they had some they did some mock-up computer stuff too, which was awesome. And it's like the entire Terran base, like everything, the barracks, the turret, the command center, they all take off, and then they form this huge mighty gestalt that looks a little reminiscent of Omega Supreme, and he just starts kicking everybody's butt, man. And they've got some audio clips as well, and several of them are it's called like was it not the Terradrome, that's a G.I. Joe reference. I forget what it's called, but they do several Transformers nods in the audio clips, like Terradrome Terrorize, you know. And
yeah. Here I'm looking at the Transformers live action movie blog, and it looks like they got a connection to it. That's awesome. So you're saying this was obviously it's an April Fool's joke.
Oh God, yeah. I mean it'd be kind of cool if they got enough response on it that maybe they put that in the game later on, like with an expansion pack, because they always come out with an expansion pack, just to make things more ridiculous. But
Terratron, the whole
Terratron, yeah,
built by the whole base armament, the whole blasted base, roll Omega Supreme Defense. So, all right, I'm gonna watch this here.
We'll pause the recording and we'll get your reaction afterwards.
Okay, that was freaking awesome.
Isn't that great? I mean, I've even watched the like when they morph together several times, and that is really well done. Like,
I mean,
it fits together beautifully. But I thought that was great when I first saw it. I'm like, oh my God, this is April Fool's. But if it wasn't, that would just be awesome. I mean, you know, do the StarCraft, and it's like, all right, Omega Supreme coming to kick your ass.
So, all right, on a real side question, when is StarCraft 2 coming out?
You know, I don't really know. I haven't been following it because Blizzard really has a tendency to do all things, quote, when it's ready or when it's done.
Right.
So any date that you get now, in my opinion, is completely immaterial. You know, until the Gold Master goes to press, and after that point when they announce a release date, that's the only time I'm going to believe it.
Right.
You know, so I have no idea, although I do know that now that Activision is going along with them, you know, they seem to be a little more, how shall we say, money grubbing than it has been in past. They're going to release three versions of the game. Each version you get is only going to be one army.
Right. And you basically go through one part of the game at a time, right?
Yeah, but instead of getting all three for one box price, you have to buy three.
Oh, you have to buy all three to get all the armies?
Yes.
Oh, that sucks.
Well, I don't know about for Battle.net. I mean, you probably can use the units, you know, in Battle.net. I don't know. I'm just guessing. But as far as the storyline is concerned, you know, when you go through, you've got to buy. Yeah, if you want the Zerg, you got to buy the Zerg.
I can't wait for that game. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
Yeah, that might be something where I'm actually going to have to pencil out a couple days or something and just sort of take some time off. But all right, well, back to Transformers. So that's a very cool April Fool's joke. So back to regular Transformer news that is actually news and not jokes.
Right.
Ferrar, Revenge of the Fallen has 60-some robot characters in it. And Industrial Light and Magic, Scott Ferrar, the visual effects supervisor of Transformers 2, has said that there are 60-some robot characters in the film. Mr. Farrar also is the visual effects supervisor for Transformers. Speaking with Variety, he says the robots will interact with their settings a lot more this time around, including splashes and the hits, splashes and the hits and the fighting on dirt or moving, banging into trees. So, I mean, not that we didn't doubt the special effects are going to be awesome, but obviously with every movie, it's going to get a little bit more awesomer. So hopefully this will be even more awesome.
Awesomer, huh? All right.
You like that word?
I think that's like the next step up from funner.
Oh, gosh. And it ain't to believe I do this for a living sometimes. All right. So what do you think? Anything other than a lot of probably red shirts probably going to be in this movie, I'm presuming?
That's my concern, because that leads into the next story, you know, which is that Paramount confirms Revenge of the Fallen characters. And, you know, talking about how they released a list of the main characters of the movie. They said they posted a full list while national news, the paper USA Today has commentary from Michael Bay and scriptwriter Alex Kurtzman and Roberto Orsi on the new characters. And now maybe I just got a bad link or whatnot. I don't know, but I clicked and I was looking and there aren't 60 characters in this list. I mean, maybe these are just the main ones that I'm looking at.
Right. Well, these are the main ones, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot of the ones that we've talked about that are going to be – I mean, well, Devastator takes up 7, so –
Well, I guess, but I mean, yeah, it's like if these are the main ones, then that's fine. You know, that's a pretty good stable from what I'm seeing. But yeah, if we're talking 60, that is going to be a hell of a lot of red shirts.
Yeah.
You know, like, welcome to Earth. And then, you know, you just see a bullet go through their head. Yeah. Okay.
So really quickly to go over these, as if you didn't know these already, if you're a true fan, Optimus Prime, Ironhide, Ratchet, Bumblebee. And then RC, a female pink Autobot motorcycle that shows up as Michaela Bane's, Megan Fox's, motorcycle. Jetfire, the older SR-71 Blackbird jet Decepticon switches sides. He's old, craggy, forgetful, doesn't work very well. Mr. Bay tells USA Today he can't transform very well because he's very geriatric. They get stuck with him a lot. He knows the plan of the bad guys and he forgets all the good parts of the plan. Wow. That just doesn't give me hope for a well thought out character.
Jetfire is a senile old dude, just doesn't work for me really well.
I don't know. It's trying to find the problem with Transformers is you're trying to find human emotions in robots and, you know, trying to give stereotypical characters to these robots sometimes they go overboard and you're just sort of like, that wouldn't happen with a robot, come on. You know, it's sort of, you know, the BS factor gets a little bit too far. Anyhow, going on, Jolt, the original toy was a Decepticon, but in the movie he's a good guy. Sideswipe, Skids, and Mudflap, aka the twins. Some of the junior Transformers are just dumb, Mr. Bay tells the paper with a laugh, but it's great for the kids because they're like the little engine that could. Great.
Heroes,
but they get heroic at the end. Yeah.
What does this say? Transforming Jar Jar Binks and his retarded brother. Yeah. Oh, God. I mean, please.
Let's just hope that the animation and the action overpowers the goofiness of the movie. So
I don't know. And maybe they'll just use them sparingly, but I just...
Please good voice actors. It's all in the voice actors.
Oh, I agree. But yeah, and then you got the Decepticons, which Starscream, which we obviously kind of figured. Yeah. Scorponok, which again, you know, probably figured. The Fallen, of course. And it says that he's one of the original Transformers, and he's called the most elemental bad guy by the screenwriters. And he is sort of a Transformers version of Lucifer. All right. The USA Today article reads, and Orsi and Kurtzman say that the Fallen holds the key to life on both Earth and Cybertron, the Transformers' home planet. So whatever that means, we don't know. You got Sideways, who's the Audi R8 we talked about previously. Soundwave, all the bite says is that he was a cassette player originally. Well, right, and then his alternate mode will fly. But I mean, we've pretty much got confirmation that it's like a spy satellite kind of jet, right?
Right, right, right.
Yeah. And then Ravage, which is looks great. And while he's always been lethal, there's actually another skill set Ravage has that didn't exist before, Kurtzman
Jeez,
tells US
what that
Today.
Could be.
I don't know. So there's going to be a surprise for fans,
you
they
know,
say.
You do know. We talked about this. It'd be him being a possible pretender. He's the
I
girl.
I thought we had talked about somebody else being the possible pretender. I'm not sure.
Supposedly, it's from everything I've heard, it's supposed to be Ravage is the girl. But
I guess my question is, because, I mean, even the thing says here, the little bite, the four-legged cat-like robot will not speak, only ferocious growling. So are we to assume that, I mean, if that is the pretender, then that'd be kind of a stretch that'd be like he could only speak in hot girl mode.
Maybe the hot girl is deaf.
Death.
And she can't speak.
Well, we want to introduce supernatural cosmic entities into this.
I'm just throwing that out. Obviously that was a bad attempt as a joke, but basically I'm saying, you know, if he is the girl that supposedly woos Shia LaBeouf's character, you know, maybe if he doesn't speak in girl mode, then maybe she's a mute or some sort like that. But I doubt that. But I'm just trying to put they're saying Aerie doesn't speak, only ferocious growling. So I'm assuming there's got to be some other role or power or, you know, maybe function that he has if he has a pretender shell or something like that. So
don't know.
We'll have to see how it plays out. Okay. Insecticons. Wow. The Insecticons are in here. The giant bugs in the original series and Hasbro toy line will make an appearance in Revenge of the Fallen, but now they're typey, creely infiltrators.
Tiny, creepy, crawly infiltrators.
Oh, so that explains what he was pulling apart in the trailer.
Yeah, I mean, I actually kind of like that, you know, because the whole fly on the wall thing. I mean, don't get me wrong. I loved them in Gen 1, you know, but I think the idea as, you know, as the infiltrators, you know, that's great. That I think that really fits well with the whole, you know, with the whole lore of it. And I think that's going to be good. That one doesn't bother me at all. I like that a lot.
Okay. What about the next one?
I believe they're referring to you guys. So they call it in the news bit the Doctor, but because of a later bit of news that we see, I believe they're referring to Scalpel. Maybe, I don't know. It says a spider-like droid that transforms into various implements of torture and has a not-so-nice encounter with Shia LaBeouf. Because the Scalpel, you know, from later on that we see, he's kind of like a torturous perceptor, I guess. He transforms into a microscope and he's, you know, got lots of little, well, as the name would imply, you know, implements of death and destruction on him. Right. And it's hard to read, but you can make out his bio where it talks about that Decepticons would rather suffer in silence than have Scalpel work on them because he's not really too careful. You know, he gets in there, gets the job done, but it's going to really hurt while he's doing it. So I think that's who they're talking about is Scalpel, and okay. He's a smaller droid, like a Frenzy style.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's get to that when we get to that news bit then. So obviously, Speaking of smaller droids, we have Wheelie, who is the small radio-controlled truck. Demolisher, which of course is one of the Constructicons that transforms into the Constructicon vehicles. That's the big wheel thing. And then, of course, Devastator, which is made up of Scavenger, Scrapper, Hightower, Long Haul, Rampage, Overload, and Mixmaster. So, and they say that he's made up of vehicles designed to build, and he turns into someone who loves to destroy. He's an agent of absolute chaos. And Mr. Bass says Devastator is the cream de la smash and got an uncharacteristic reaction out of the film's executive producer already. When executive producer Steven Spielberg saw it and said, "This is expletive awesome," Mr. Bay recalls. It's always nice to if you can make him swear. All right, so there you go. So there you have your characters, your main characters. So at least we know RC is going to be in there, and she's going to be pink, which I guess is the most important thing.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, moving on to Net Revenge of the Fallen production stills, explosions, Fox and LaBeouf.
Maybe even new Revenge of the Fallen
what
productions.
What did I say?
You said net.
Oh. All right. Why don't you just take that next little story right there? You know.
So MeganFox.net has posted 4 ultra high quality new production stills from the new Transformers movie.
Oh, geez, you gotta be kidding me.
This one's like right up the bra line.
I mean, come on.
Oh, yeah, yeah. The first one, it's like you just want to, like, you know, seriously, just like take a ski ball and throw it down there. I'm like, woo, 50 points.
Oh, come on. This is so. All right, go on. I'm sorry.
Yeah. So, yeah, and the explosion we've seen before, you know, but it's good quality photo, you know. But yeah, other images, you got Shy, Megan, Egyptian shoot, you know, a couple guys laying in the sand, you know, pointing to something. I don't know. I mean, they're definitely good quality pictures. I mean, they're no high quality, but you know, nothing too huge. I mean, yeah, she's definitely doing some fan service there with the first one, with the cavern of joy that she's showing to everybody.
Well, the interesting thing I find out is the one shot has Shia LaBeouf and Michael Bay sort of on the ground, sort of plotting out where it looks like they're going to be running or something. And so this was probably taken just after his accident, and you can sort of see what kind of condition his hand was in at the time. And it's just, wow, his hand got really messed up in that car accident there.
Well, keep in mind, you know, he's in costume right there. So it could have been, I mean, that could be, you know, just extra movie wizardry as well.
I think because when you look at the shots that contain him in the, I could be wrong. I could have swore he had it bandaged up a little bit differently in the movie shots. But, you know, that could be the extra stuff that they put on there as well. So, but
I...
But yeah, so check out those high resolution photos of now, according to what we've been told, they were like the first ones to be able to actually climb the pyramids in like the longest time because of the accidents of people climbing the pyramids and stuff. And I'm looking at this now going, wow, I actually want to go look at the pyramids because they look pretty darn cool from these photos.
Oh, I mean, I'd love to actually get over to Egypt at some point. But, yeah, it's like these days, much like a lot of things, jackasses from the past, and by the past, I don't mean ancient past. I mean like in the last, you know, 5 to 20 years, really screwed up, you know, you being able to see stuff. Like to me, the two biggest examples of that, like you can go and see the pyramids, you know, but you can't climb on them, obviously.
Right.
Stonehenge, you can't walk through it anymore. It's all fenced off because people were chipping off pieces of the monoliths to take home with them.
Aww.
So now you can only get like 50 feet away. You can't walk through and under it. And then you remember – they're not the oldest anymore, but the cave paintings in Lascaux, they used to take people down there, you know, as tours. But then everybody would be touching the walls and, you know, putting their dirty, greasy hands on it. And the paintings were starting to get damaged and rubbed off. So now that's totally closed to the public. And the only people that can get down there are researchers and archaeologists and, you know, people who have business being down there.
Right.
So, yeah, I mean, with the pyramids, they're at least relatively big. They've held up for a long time. But, yeah, you can't climb on them. And it's like the tours are kind of like, yep, there they are. You're a few hundred yards away. Woo! You know, so I want to see them, but it makes me sad that I will not get to experience things as well as I could have because people just don't know how to act.
Right. Well, you know, that's like at the – whenever you go to a museum like the Air Force Museum, they don't want you to touch the jets because the oil from your hands will, you know – over time, if everybody did that, it would slowly, you know, erode away at the jets and stuff. So, but I'm surprised they were actually able to get this close to the pyramids because I would imagine that the people would be fearful of them damaging it in some way, shape, or form. So,
well, Egypt has actually got, and this might be a little bit of an aside here. I forget the name of the guy who runs it, but like he is the head of everything that has to do with, you know, Egypt's history as far as archaeologically. Like if you ever watch the History Channel or Discovery Channel and there's ever anything on Egypt, it's this older dude with a white mustache and white hair. He's really kind of jovial and he heads everything. Mm-hmm. And they still actively, you know, they're excavating constantly. So, I mean, there's work being done all around. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine it might have just been, you know, hey, we're going to pay you guys lots of money. Can you come and supervise us if you will allow us to do this, you know, so I don't really think it would have been that hard. It's just, you know, let's pay into the Egyptian, you know, relic fund, whatever they want to call it. And, you know, you supervise us, kind of like, you know, sometimes the Humane Society comes along to make sure we're not, like, you know, cold cocking our horses, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. All right. Well, there's really no way to end that particular story but to just move on to the next one.
Right. Kind of like a Saturday Night Live skit.
You know, well, God, that's funny that you mentioned that. It was the first time I watched the whole show for the first time last night, but that's another topic for another time. Revenge of the Fallen scenes shown at Show West 2009. And several scenes from Transformers Revenge of the Fallen were shown during the Show West 2009 event, where director Michael Bay was honored with the Vanguard Award for Excellence in Filmmaking. Wow. I don't know what Show West is, but I am a little bit concerned. the scenes were described by Coming Soon and 8-8 Cool News, among other sites that were in attendance of the event, which helped assemble the write-up below. The major scene that was shown during the event was a conversation between Sam and Bumblebee in the garage of the Witwicky household. Sam tells Bumblebee that he is heading off to college and that Bumblebee cannot come because freshmen aren't allowed to take vehicles to school. Oh, sounds like our school, Jace. Plus, he doesn't need protection anymore.
I'm a big boy now.
Yeah. Throughout the scene, we find that Bumblebee is once again struggling with his speaker box and returns to using the radio to communicate. When he learns that he cannot come, Bumblebee sprays windshield washer fluid to simulate his sadness.
Oh.
As Bumblebee and Sam spark and speak inside the garage of the under-repair Witwicky household, Michaela is outside waiting and changing into a dress of what Coming Soon describes as a wedding dress-like design and a bouquet of purple flowers. As for the house being under repair, AICN speculates it could stem from the attack that may happen earlier in the scene. We are providing a look at the said attack in the full teaser trailer. After the scene wraps up, a quick montage of the action sequences are shown. One involves an extended look at the daylight battle scene between Devastator and Optimus Prime that we saw during the Super Bowl spot and what seems to be another angle. In this version, the camera captures the action from afar, and when Optimus Prime is punched, he sails towards us, hits the ground, and rolls to a stop in front of the camera and spits something out. This is most likely another fragment that we saw flying out when he first got hit. Other scenes include explosions, giant robots with saw blades cutting a car in half, and a mechanical bug being forced into Sam's mouth. Oh, that's really gross. And thanks to John Doe 4880 and Sabres fan for the fines. So pretty much a little bit more extended stuff of what we know. I think the important thing to mention there is that it sets up why Sam is going away to college and why Bumblebee still can't talk.
You think they could fix him? I don't know.
I know. Major plot point. All right. Well, moving on to toy news, Jace.
We've got the BotCon 2009 Wings of Honor number 5 Elite Guard Commander Thunderclash.
Wow.
So Fun Publications has unveiled their fifth and final figure of the BotCon 2009 Wings of Honor box set as the Elite Guard Commander Thunderclash. According to the character bio, Thunderclash is a decisive leader who is never afraid to take action. He commands the instant respect and loyalty of every soldier he takes under his wing, despite the fact that he looks like a complete pile of breakfast cereal. The figure is a remolded and repainted version of the Transformers Energon Rodimus Prime. And boy, does his color, God. It's like, I don't know. I'm thinking my circuits are on the line. I'm going to take an Energon bolt through the head. And this guy trundles out to lead us to victory. And it's like, we're going to kill them, and we're going to kill them fabulously.
Oh, come on now. He's not that. Wow.
Dude, he's terrible. His color scheme is terrible. I mean, I think
I'm trying to come up with a politically correct way, and then I'm just failing at every. But yeah, his color scheme is just a little too chromatic.
I mean, I can't even speak on the quality of the toy. I mean, I think it looks okay, but I just my brain can't get past the complete assault. I mean, it's like one leg's not even the same color as the other, and it's teal, and he's got a cute little tattoo of a eagle or a hawk or something that
it's
just
an assault on the senses.
Oh, just terrible. I mean, I just can't imagine him sauntering up in front of a group of elite guard and giving a Patton-esque speech, you know, like he did in front of the flag there in the George C. Scott movie, and everybody being like, "Yeah!" I mean, he just gets up there and be like, "What?"
Seriously, dude, your color schemes really suck.
Oh my god. We're going to go over that hill and we're going to kill all those Decepticons. Yay!
Who brought the Rainbow Bright robot to the party? I mean, seriously.
Oh my god, it's very nice.
Oh. I think that's Strawberry Shortcake. You know, I wish I would love to look at the additional photos. Unfortunately, botcon.com is not coming up right now for me, folks. So
yeah. I haven't been able to see anything but this horrible picture.
Yeah, so let's just say that we've seen enough and move on to the next story. All right, first looks at Fans Project Powered Commander Redeco Transformers. And the guys at Fans Project have posted some first looks at the TFCon 09 Powered Commander action figure Redeco they are making. The images of the prototype figure shown us new deco with the classic missiles on the trailer sides and accessory case. So what do we think of this baby?
You know, I'm kind of torn on it. I mean, I think all in all, it's pretty decent. But I think that aesthetically, the trailer is too similar to the cab. So it almost makes it look like it's a big red, white, and blue brick.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, the toy itself is great. I like the overall unit of it. I mean, other than the color scheme, which to me, normally I'm always complaining that the color scheme is not cohesive, you know, like in the last, you know, ridiculous, you know, vomitous
toy
thing we just saw. But this, I think, is too similar. Mm. It blends the lines together too much.
It's
on
too
the
much
toy.
Red. But then again, you know, they're trying to do what they're trying to do, which I can understand, is that they're trying to match the color scheme of the Ultramagnus Diaclone toy in Japan that you saw in the extended Transformers movie footage. So in order to get that probably in robot mode, those particular parts up top probably need to be probably that's why they need to be red for this particular reason. So.
Oh, I mean, I hear you, but I'm even thinking that maybe just a little more black, you know, like even go like a cartoon thing. Like everything's outlined in black, not that you don't want everything, but just, you know, maybe just a few little black stripes here and there, just a little more to kind of help break up the lines a little bit. I mean, I still think it looks great. Right. That's really – I mean, if that's all I can complain about is the color scheme is too cohesive, then I think it's kind of a win.
Oh, I was sure. You know, my friend Matt stopped by. He was here, stood over Wednesday night because he was in town for a convention. I was showing him the Fans Project, a little animation thing for their trailer and stuff. And that just, you know, completely blew him away in terms of, you know, the little add-ons. I was trying to explain to him. I'm like, yeah, they seem to be making a lot of Prime trailers right now.
Right.
If I had any foresight, I would have gone into Prime trailers in the stock market. But nope, never didn't see that one coming. So,
right.
So I showed him that he was like, wow, he was pretty much, you know, speechless. So, but
right on.
All right. You want to take the next story?
Revenge of the Fallen Scout Class Dune Runner and Scalpel in package. That's what we were talking about before. Mm. So thanks to Yayabi, we have images of Transformers Scout Class Autobot Dune Runner and Decepticon Scalpel figures. The images confirm that the figure we previously called the Landmine Mini-Me is called Dune Runner. This is the first time we've ever seen Scalpel, which is the Decepticon microscope. You know, for there's also the bio and images of each figures as well. They're a little you can read them. It's a little hard, but you can read them.
Yeah, and that's what you're reading, that the Decepticons would rather just deal with a war wound than let this guy work on them. So is he a working microscope?
Oh, I don't know if it's a working microscope or not. I mean, let me get to the actual picture of it. I don't know. I mean, even so, it's like, yeah, Perceptor was a working microscope in a manner, you know.
minor magnification of what, 10? So the Decepticons are the ones with the microscope. That's kind of a switch on things. So,
well, I mean, I think it kind of makes sense though, because especially if this guy is a little, he almost kind of reminds me of a cross between like a spider and a praying mantis. And if he's some crazy little, mad scientist torture dude, I mean, it makes sense that, he's on Decepticon.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of these toys I think we're seeing, like Dune Runner, are just going to be like the red shirts in the background that are really not going to have a speaking part, maybe. So,
yeah. I mean, and honestly, I think just from what I can make out of the boxes, Dune Runner looks like a pretty good toy.
I know. I'm looking at him. It's like, that doesn't look too bad. So,
oh, the color scheme's cohesive. It looks like it fits. The vehicle mode looks great. It doesn't look, ridiculous at all. And the robot mode, I mean, I like him a lot.
Yeah. You know what's going to be sad is probably the most awesome toys are going to be the ones that we don't get to see the characters on the screen for very much.
Yeah, well, at least you get the toy. But yeah, the scalpel toy doesn't, at least from what, I mean, the pictures, while they're all right, there's a lot to be desired. I don't know.
It's a new take on things. I'm down with it.
Oh, well, yeah, no, yeah. I'm just saying that, like, on the back of the box, it looks really good.
Right.
But the front of the box with the bubble, I don't know. I can't.
It's hard to make out.
Yeah, it's hard to make out, so I'm not quite sure what I'm looking at there. I'm hoping that the toy actually looks as good as the stuff on the back of the box. So we have a look at the Revenge of the Fallen Ultimate Bumblebee in box. So thanks to Arlen, we have our first look at this figure and all of its boxed goodness. And, it's got features, character bio, all kinds of good stuff. And you can check that out in the movie database. And, this looks big.
Yeah,
I mean, like ton of stuff.
Well, the Ultimate Bumblebee from the first movie was pretty amazing to begin with. So I'm not sure if they just sort of, pumped him up and did a little bit of alteration on that. But, the Ultimate Bumblebee was quite expensive too. I can't remember the exact price, but I want to say $50 maybe.
So, well, I mean, you definitely get your money's worth out of this. I mean, with everything, with the sounds and the. And apparently it plays The Touch by Stan Bush. And
oh, really? Where do you see that?
Oh, it was in, it was in, what's the picture? Third picture. Communicates through music and speech, including The Touch by Stan Bush.
Oh, that's awesome. So, yeah, he finally did get into a toy. That's awesome.
Yeah. And, yeah, it says you got screeching brakes and noise and sounds and lights and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Add-on conversion sounds, revved engines. Animate arms, heads, and wings. It's the toy. It's a toy for everybody.
Seriously, it's a ShamWow and a Slap Chop all in one as well.
Combined with a Snuggie.
Yes, exactly. I tell you what, though, I like the look of his battle helmet in this. Like, I always thought that, at least from the toys, Bumblebee's head looked stupid. It's almost like he was like sucking on a paper towel roll or something. I never really liked the big, huge, round thing that was like right in the middle of where his mouth would be. And I just never liked the look of his face. And I think that the battle helmet, I dig that a lot more. Like if I bought this toy, he'd pretty much be wearing his battle helmet the whole time.
Question I want to know is, when have you seen somebody sucking on a paper towel roll?
I was an only child.
Don't answer that. Don't answer that.
No, I was an only child. I was adventurous. I was bored. I was in college. You got to try everything once.
All right. Why don't you try telling us in the next story, since you're trying everything once, searching for transition. Just go already.
First look, the SDCC 2009 exclusive 25th anniversary Soundwave. I'm digging this. The Transformers Collectors Club website has posted a first look of the Comic-Con International San Diego 2009 exclusive 25th anniversary Soundwave special edition figure. Wow, that's extra adjective. Okay. What's so special, you ask, despite the fact that I'm – anyway. The figure will include three of Soundwave's cassettes. Now, this doesn't – okay, it says three, but right. Yet they list Ravage, Buzzsaw, Laserbeak, and Ratbat. So I'm assuming that – take your pick. It's either Buzzsaw or Laserbeak. I don't know.
Well, no, I'm thinking that I think you actually might get for, well, you know what? Let's go over to TransformersClub.com and check it out here.
Yeah, it says this is the original mold way back from 84 and, you know, looks as good as he ever did, man. And he was one that I never had when I was a kid and I really wanted to. I had most of the cassettes because those were, you know, cheap to buy.
Now, this isn't the original mold.
Because he's got the clear case on the front there. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a little bit different because that's the one where they did the re-release for the classics version, which I got too. It's a little bit different from the original toy, which I also have.
Yes.
So, I mean, man, this mold, though, is getting more use of than probably back in the older days.
Yeah, I mean, I do
recycling this.
Yeah, I do kind of wish that they had the original, at least like as far as holding the cassettes in his chest cavity, as opposed to being, you know, wacky tacked onto the front of him. I mean, it just kind of, it almost looks like he's got one of those little like baby carriers.
Actually, the reason why they did that is so you can hold all three cassettes in there.
Oh, so they actually do go in his chest.
Yeah. There's space for three of them. So when I got the classics version, you can actually hold Laserbeak, Ravage, and then like a Frenzy or something. So you can put three cassettes in at a time. So there's extra space.
Cool. Yeah, because I didn't have any. I've never owned a version of Soundwave, so I didn't know that. So that's cool. That's actually, I dig that.
Yeah, I mean, compared to the original toy, besides the original toy that I have being a little bit worn, it's pretty much the same down to that extra space that they extended in the tape player. But to me, I think they should have just left it more like the original one, where it's actually meshed up against the front of him. But, you know, then again, what do I know? It's probably easier to produce them this way as well. So,
still a good-looking toy, though, so I dig that.
One of the fan favorites. So
absolutely.
All right, so Cybertron Mode Animated Ratchet heading to stores in May. TFOA has posted an interesting image of what looks to be a figure of Transformers Animated Ratchet during his Cybertron days. While this is the first time we have seen the figure, this is most likely the deluxe Ratchet figure that we heard was going to be released in the end of May. The destroyed face mode is most likely a theft deterrent from the factory. According to the pre-order slips that went out for Wave 3 Ratchet figure, the deluxe case will also include Freeway Jazz. We have not seen any visual confirmation of this figure yet, though. So, interesting. So, possible... So this is my conundrum. It's like, if we keep hearing that Animated is basically done with, then... You know, why do they keep making the toys? Are they just going to run the line out until they're done?
They might just run the line out. I mean, I'd like to think that maybe they might just be taking a break, you know, to let the movie have its, like, shining year, you know?
Right.
And, you know, you get the movie out, get the DVD sales done, and, you know, then maybe we can get back to business. I don't know. But, you know, yeah. Really hoping that they keep Animated going, even though it looks like they're not.
Yeah. So it's probably one of the – well, we'll get to the review of the episode for this week here shortly. But all right, new images of Revenge of the Fallen Megatron, and it turns out it's a Voyager. Hey, the Transformers Revenge of the Fallen Mystery Megatron turns out to be a Voyager. So I guess I could completely edit out the previous story that we talked about 5 seconds ago.
I guess you can.
Thanks to a comparative look at the previously seen Megatron figure posted by TFOA. We still don't have the explicit confirmation of the class of the smaller figure, but it lends credence to the Legends class rumor that's been floating around. The additional images of the Voyager class figure shown that are completely different design than the Lear class version. This figure also sports a bluish hue all around. So interesting.
Yeah, I mean, color scheme's all right. You know, I'm not a fan of the powder blue. I kind of like Megatron as silver, black, gray, you know, that kind of thing. But the toy, I think, looks great. I mean, his face looks horrific. And, like, by that, I mean in a good way.
Yeah, but which motive? It looks like it's a completely different tank mode than the other tank mode. So is this maybe... I mean, when does this come into play is what I want to know.
I don't know. Yeah, it's almost like a more streamlined, you know, battle mode. I don't know.
Yeah. Looks like, I don't know on this one. So I guess we'll have to wait and see how the movie is to see exactly what this is a reference to. So.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. All right. And last but not least, filling out the toy news, we have out of package looks at Revenge of the Fallen Robot Heroes figures, Jace.
Yes, so we've got, thanks to eBay auctioneer Toys Lanku, we have our first look at the Robot Heroes that will be available from Revenge of the Fallen out of their blister packages. We saw the guys in their blister packaging back in February, but now, obviously, they're out. So the Versus lineup is as follows. We've got Sideswipe versus Sideways, Optimus versus Blackout, Mudflap versus Rampage, Bumblebee versus Longhaul, and Skids versus Megatron. We've also got Springer versus Starscream that they've seen floating around as well. Additional images of that figure show that it is a completely different design than the leader class version and sports a bluish hue all around. So, you know, you've got the little pictures here, and
yeah,
they're robot heroes.
You know, and once again, the movie line does not translate well to robot heroes in any way, shape, or form.
And it's funny too. Yeah, just looking like I looked at all the pictures, you know, and when I got to Optimus Prime versus Blackout, literally just popped in my head. Optimus was, you know, like, I will destroy you with my cheese whiz dispensing arms. And then Blackout's like, wait, I dropped the contact. Wait. That's totally all I saw when I got toyed. You know, I was like, oh, wait a minute.
Oh, that's hilarious. Yeah, I'm sort of like, what the heck's on his arms?
Yeah. And then the one right after it, with which has got Bumblebee, I'm not a fan of that position. It looks like he's preparing for something not too savory to occur.
Well, it depends on what you're into.
Right. Right. He might transform that way.
Yeah. You never. Well, yeah. Oh, I just got that. Oh, the other guy's like, I'm about to take a big robotic dump.
You can
make a ton of bad puns for this movie.
But yeah, I love Optimus's cheese whiz dispensing arms. Those are great.
It's like the one wheel guy, which I think is Rampage, is sort of like, I am going to make a pile of, I'm coming out of a pile of poop. Yeah. These hurt my eyes, so I'm just going to close my window. And we're going to go on to cartoon news. And our review this week of Anthony's inability to post things correctly. Or no. Oh, no. No, 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 no. Anthony's inability to scroll down the window.
Anthony's inability to function like a grown-up in a grown-up world.
Oh, all right. So anyhow, we're on to this week's episode of Transformers Anime Agent, The Five Servos of Doom.
We're not. We're on to new animated characters for season 3.
We're on to the review of the cartoon thing that we didn't review last week, because I said to you early, and I said, wait till this week when it shows on TV. I just forgot to post it into the document here.
Oh, so you want to do it before the new characters win?
Well, what do you want to do? It's up to
you. That's fine. You've made up your mind. Yeah, go for it.
All right, let's do the new characters things, and basically in a good nature attempt to confuse and disorient the fandom, Transformers animated art director, lead character designer Derek J. White has posted a panoramic view of new characters from season 3 on his blog, The Delightful Tedium. Just one problem, they're not all real. Get out your guessing hats and cross your fingers for your favorites. Read more about Mr. Wyatt's comments and a full list of characters Mr. Wyatt had to say about the image. He says, quote, I didn't just want to do a normal Luz fool you type April Fool's joke this year, so I'm trying something a little different. The Cybertron cityscape you see before you is populated with Autobots and Decepticons. Now, some of these bots are actually in Transformers Animated Season 3. That's no joke. But, of course, some of them are not. So, let's open up yonder picture and one item. And going here, we have pictured here Rodimus Prime, Sky Gary, Grandius, animated personality Vangelis, Huffer, Pipes, Botanica, Tap Out, Czar, Slapper, Sunder, Flipside, Target exclusive True Color Shockwave, and have fun guessing. Don't bother asking me because I'm not saying.
Well, you know, looking at this now, one, if the Target exclusive True Color Shockwave, like meaning that we're not going to screw with the color scheme, it's going to be exactly how it is and animated, I'm on board with that. But the two that just stick out to me and just, oh my God, please do not let this occur. Huffer and Pipes. We've got Mario and Luigi on the Autobot side. Can you imagine the episode with the Constructicons and those guys?
Oh my God. Sharp part of Italian jokes.
No, it's like, you looking at me? Nah, we're here to save the princess. You got a problem? No, we're here to fix your pipes. It's like, you're going to be sleeping with the fishes. Oh, you're so unhappy. Here, have a mushroom. You know, I just, oh, just the whole thought of that. Just getting those two crazy stereotypes in a room together, just the idiocy content would just go through the roof. It's totally Mario and Luigi. Come on.
Yeah. Obviously, that's fake, but.
Yeah, I don't know. I literally just can't get. Huh?
Looks nice.
Yeah, it looks really good. Sadly, I just can't get past the two Italian plumbers there.
Yeah. Alrighty. Well, anyway, you want to talk about the cartoon from last week?
Or sure.
This week?
This week.
Yes, this week.
Which well, last I guess week. This Sunday, so last week. Sure.
Yeah. So what do you think of George Takei as a Transformer?
I was very happy to see him in there. Now, granted, I know that one of my big, beefs is to actually get voice actors, you know, instead of hiring famous people. But if it comes to what'll amount to, I don't want to call it a cameo because he was in a good portion of the show, but, you know, kind of one off or two off characters that don't really have a huge presence, you know, I don't mind it. And, you know, I thought that, that was just a perfect choice, you know, right. For it, you know, with his way of talking, you know, I really enjoyed George Takei as that character.
So what do we think of the episode otherwise, besides being completely awesome?
You know, all in all, I thought, yeah, the episode absolutely was great. I mean, I'm still not 100% on board with the Circuit Sue thing, you know, and the processor over matter. It's a little cheesy, you know, for my taste. I liked seeing Warpath in there, even if just briefly, you know, that was great, you know, to have him there. A few other little nods that they had, you know, to various things throughout.
I love seeing Warpath. That was like, yeah, Warpath. But he's not doing the blab, spam, you know, going crazy like he usually does.
Yeah, that just, I was very happy to see he was a little more, I mean, that's what a tank should be, a little more, I mean, he's not a hyper ADD thing.
Yeah.
You know, but no, I mean, all in all, I thought it was great. They introduced, you know, Prowl's armor, you know, really well. I liked how the helmet kind of made it down through the ages with that to kind of finish off his new look. And I thought that was great. But man, Sentinel's just a jerk.
I know. I don't like the way that they can't find a way to write his character anyway other than just a jerk.
And I guess, I mean, again, I'm thinking too much into it and whatnot, but it's like he's a big shot in the Elite Guard. And you'd think that the Elite Guard, you know, they wouldn't want him running around just being dirtbags all the time. And it's just like everything he and so far the boxy twins there, you know, the idiot Jetfire and Jetstorm.
Which
Jet
we can't Storm. Seem to figure out if they're Russian or German or what.
Yeah, it's like they really just don't seem to know what the hell they're doing. They're a bunch of jump-to-conclusion idiots. And, you know, feel free to edit this word out, you know, but Sentinel's a douche.
Yeah. Yeah. No. Well, that's not that bad.
I don't get how, you know, like Ultra Magnus or any of the other higher ups would consistently let this guy still command.
Well,
he's such a jerk.
Well, one, it's probably hard to write any sort of antagonist for a story. So, you know, you have to come up with some way to write this. And maybe it is suspension of belief of this particular character and the belief that this complete douchebag would be in the elite guard. So, you know, I agree with you. I don't like his character. I don't want to see any more of his character. If anything, I want to see more of the minor characters we keep seeing than the major ones, because I'm sort of sick of the main characters at this point. You know, I mean, the only ones I really enjoy seeing are Optimus and Prowl, and we barely get to see Optimus anymore because it's usually, you know, Bumblebee or Bulkhead and Sari or you know, one of the Decepticons. So I want to see more. I want to see more Decepticons. I want to see more action sequences. And this, it seems like they came out of the gate with season three with an action-packed, unbelievable episode. And then they said, let's throw in for the second episode the absolute worst one we got and then work our way up to the best one. Because it seems like, you know, the one with Waspinator, it was good, but it wasn't that great. And now this one was really good. So I'm curious to see what next week's episode is going to be, because it seems like they sort of know how they need to balance out the good episodes from the bad episodes. And maybe they are aware of, you know, well, that really wasn't a good episode, but it's just a filler for the show, you know?
Right, right.
Then again, I've never ran any sort of toy before. So, you know, I can't, you know, I haven't ran any sort of episode for a TV show or something like that. So I don't know what you could possibly, you know, what you possibly could do for terms of writing things and that, you know, what you're allowed to get away with by the censors. I mean, it's hard to write for kids shows to begin with. So I give, once again, the creators a lot of credit for what they're doing to begin with.
Oh, absolutely. And I do have a question though. So my question was, you know, Yokotron, he's there, you know, lying, you know, after most of the protoforms had been taken and whatnot, and he's dying. And so he kicks off, and then Prowl just runs over to one of the remaining protoforms that didn't get taken, and apparently everybody's spark comes in a convenient carrying case now, and he just inserts him into a new one, which instantly morphs him into what his old body looked like. And, you know, then for whatever reason, you know, Yokotron was like, no, 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 and he just turns himself back off. But again, this just goes into my – I mean, I was happy to see that, you know, he turned himself off and truly, you know, died, because how often does that ever actually happen in this show? But I'm like, that just adds yet another layer of immortality to these characters. I'm like, so as long as the spark hasn't completely gone out yet, you know, is that all you got to do? I mean, is that
well, that
what we're
going to
get? Blur, we're going to get like a can opener on Blur and slap his spark into a new protoform and woo!
This is something that started with Beast Wars, where basically if the body of the robot is damaged beyond where it's going to die, it just goes down to stasis mode until it can get repaired. And they played off a lot of this in Beast Wars and Beast Machines. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty much as long as the spark is able to be contained, you can pretty much keep a Transformer running forever.
Mm.
Yeah, I know. It's... But once again, it's a kid's show. We can't have characters die because then the kids get all, you know, they start crying and stuff like that. And you can't have that. They don't want another, you know, return of the Optimus Prime on their hands. So,
yeah, that was the only part of the show that really kind of bugged me, other than the sheer presence of Sentinel, you know, was just the, you know, oh, let's take this ice cube out of one glass and put it into another glass. Mmm, tasty, you know.
Well, speaking of dying, here's some late-breaking movie news that just came in under the wire. And Bay reveals death of Revenge of the Fallen character. Now, granted, this is on April 4th, so I'm not taking this as April Fool's, folks. But Transformers Revenge of the Fallen director Michael Bay has revealed that he will kill off RC in the film simply because he didn't like her. You know
right
what?
On.
You know what? I didn't like RC, the filmmaker told MTV, so I kill her later, all right? In fact, he hated the character so much that he didn't even bother wasting time on making it emotional. This is just get it out and get it over with kind of death, Mr. Bay tells MTV. According to Mr. Bay, the death of the character is quite sudden and it isn't sad. MTV recounts him grinning as he discusses the death of the pink motorcycle. Mr. Bay also jokes that she should have given a better performance than that to the fans of the female Transformer. It is sad. I'm sorry. During his interview with MTV, he also denies that RC shows up in the film as the motorcycle that Michaela Baines will be riding. No, he denies she has nothing to do with Megan. This denial is despite the fact that USA Today stated this information as fact during the recent article spotlighting the characters in the film.
You know, again, this could be, you know, a smokescreen kind of thing that you know, he's known for. But in a way, I kind of hope that it's not. I hope that she is in there, and I hope that she does die, and I hope that it's completely non-heroic.
Because
you know what? You know what that reminds me of when you were reading that to me? Any fans of Star Trek The Next Generation – Tasha Yar's death. Now, granted, she wanted to leave the show to go off and pursue her what was, of course, going to bloom into a wonderful movie career. You know, I think she was like the mom in Deep Impact. I think that was like the only thing I ever saw her in. But regardless, that was her choice. But yeah, it was like it wasn't heroic. It was like, bam, you're dead.
Yeah.
And that's the thing. In war, not every death's heroic. I mean, you'd love to jump into the fray, sword swinging, and give your buddies time to escape and whatnot. But sometimes you just take a stray bullet in the face.
I think that
having one of those in there would be good. You know, like she's like, I got it up. Oh, you know, and oh, she got it.
Yeah. Well, first of all, that isn't going to work on several counts. One, all the female fans will be pissed off, and the amount of crap that'll be sent back to Hasbro will piss them off. Two, there'll be some feminists that would say that, oh, you're killing the girl now. See, you kill the stereotypical, you know, hood guy, so now you're killing the girl. What does that say?
Dude, have you been so cowed by political correctness that you just...
I'm in marketing. You have to include political correctness in all your marketing decisions.
Oh, because I can just imagine a bunch of Hindenburg tattoo wearing panty, you know, cotton panty wearing feminists are going to be writing, you know, a letter saying RC died and, you know, that's terrible and we demand justice. And I can totally see that.
Well, I don't think that this for once, I don't think that this is true. I think he's simply trying to do a smokescreen because one, you know, there's a lot of potential for that character there, and I don't think that he would just simply come out and say that unless there was some joke to that or something like that.
Yeah.
So I don't think that RC is really going to die. But if, you know, first of all, you have to remember that, yes, there's a difference between, you know, a reality-type movie that's supposed to show you the grim, you know, views of war, such as, you know, Private Ryan, Saving Private Ryan. Or something that's a little bit of a fantasy where, you know, they can elaborate a little bit on things. So, for example, I know there's a couple examples I could pull out of my hat. One of them is the guy from Battlestar Galactica said, you know, well, we know that this particular ship ran in this ship and then hitting another ship wouldn't really actually happen. But, you know, for just, you know, drama sakes and the fact that we wanted to see it, we decided to go with it. Another example is when they were doing Yoda fighting in the last couple Star Wars movies. He said, you know, well, we can make the cape sort of flow more, you know, romantic. It doesn't have to necessarily be realistic when he's fighting. So, I mean, there's things he can do to movies to sort of stretch the reality a little bit. So it's not exactly reality. And
well, I think the two examples you gave were simply aesthetic. I mean, I'm talking about just adding credence and depth to the conflict at hand. Not every member of a conflict is going to get the honor of dying heroically, whether it's RC or not. I mean, that's what the red shirts are for, you know. Right. But I would like to see one of the main or second string characters just take a stray bullet, so to speak, you know, just to add to the fact that there's collateral damage being flung around and that not everything has to be, you know, this mighty last, you know, 300 last stand kind of thing.
Well, I agree with you, but I think you also have to, in these particular types of movies, you can't really just kill somebody off. I mean, that was one of the biggest complaints of the first movie that, you know, Prime literally wept 2 seconds over Jazz's body, you know, is that you got to give a little bit of credence to some death if it does occur, at least the character has been at least introduced and a little bit developed. If it's somebody that you know, it's just in the background, oh, okay, you know, no biggie. But, you know, if they introduce somebody and they've had, you know, a little bit, a couple lines, you just can't kill them off without giving some sort of credence. I think that feels like, well, you've introduced this character to me and then you've killed them. And the point was, why?
I'm not saying don't mourn the death. You know, it's like if Bumblebee like took it on the chin or whatever, by all means, have your little 2 to 3 minute, you know, mourning montage sequence or whatever, horses running in the background and whatever you want to do. But I'm just saying that I think that it would be interesting to have. I mean, I thought they overdid it in the animated show, like, you know, the old Transformers movie. You know, everybody was falling over and hardly any even screamed. That was too much. But, you know, just one, you know, just, you know, like Devastator goes up and like peppers the entire area with shrapnel or whatever. And one bot didn't quite make it behind the building in time, you know, something like that.
See, I'm going to say you're going to have to address that in some sort of dramatic way. Otherwise, you're going to leave people feeling empty. But then again, we're making conjectures on a movie we haven't seen that's literally about 80 days away. So. Which, yes. By the way, remind me, we got to talk about you coming to visit for the movie. So
God knows I'd love to get the hell out of this city for a while.
Well, why don't you just put on your calendar that you're coming to visit that weekend?
Yeah.
check with work and see if you could take off. So
yeah.
I literally got friends from my hometown possibly coming in to see this thing. So it's going to be a party.
Oh, that'd be nice. Yeah. So you'll have a hard time getting me to leave, though. I'll be like hiding up in the attic, like, Jace, you got to go back to Pittsburgh. I don't want to. Pizza shops and auto body shops and everything's out of business and broken down and I don't want to go. Yeah.
Columbus, we're not Pittsburgh.
Hey, you know, like I said, a lot of people like Pittsburgh. That's cool. Not for me.
Yeah. Well, for each their own.
Each their own.
And for each their own, we can move on to comic news, and you too can pick up Transformers comic now with the added Transformers Animated. Transformers comic number 23 on sale March 26th is a 68-page giant size comic strip packed issue, bulging at the staples with a heady mix of robot action. Issue number 23 is a must for Transformer Animated fans. For the next 3 issues, everyone's favorite Detroit-based characters will be appearing in the Transformers comic. As the story states in the Transformers Animated comic continues, a quick update on the tale so far. In the 22nd century Detroit, an Optimus Prime and his band of Autobots, Prowl, Ratchet, Bumblebee, and Bulkhead are busy trying to protect Earth from the tyrannical Megatron and his treacherous band of Decepticons, helping them in their fight in the e-human girl Sari and the new recruit Afterburn, Academy-trained Special Ops Ebot? I don't know what it looks like, a funky character there. Sent to Earth to learn more about humans and their customs for Cybertron's elite guard. While the Autobots are fighting evil, Starscream Megatron's duplicitous former second-in-command is weighing on the renegade Decepticon, and he's about to cause big trouble for Prime and Co. Transformers comic number 23 will also feature original comic story CE Revolution, complete with incredible shock ending and the next installments of Megatron Origins number 3 and Beast Wars number 3. Find out if your Transformers knowledge is strong enough to grant you entry to Cybertron with our entrance exam. There's a profile of charismatic Beast Wars Megatron and a chance to win a must-have Nintendo Wii and limited edition Nintendo DS in games. So, and that is on sale now. So, what?
You just cracked me up with the way that you're reading it. It's like someone's holding a gun to your head and they're like, if you don't get through this in 30 seconds, I'm pulling the trigger. You're like, I'm sorry. It's just.
All right. Well, with that being said, Mr. Eloquent and with his words and, you know, a good orator, why don't you read the next comic article, which is quite long?
We have.
Screw you.
I'm sorry. Nothing but love, baby. Nothing but love.
I know.
It's a fun drinking game, though. It's like I have like a bottle of Jack here, and every time you read something that actually isn't in the words, I take a shot. So I'm drunk already. Totally.
Play along at home, kids.
Right, exactly. So we've got new IDW previews for Defiance number 4 and Spotlight Drift. So we have 2 new 5-page previews up at the Comics Continuum and Revenge of the Fallen prequel Defiance 4, which will bring the series to a conclusion, and Spotlight Drift. Who's Drift, you say? Well, answering that question is the purpose of the Spotlight. He is a brand new G1 character courtesy of IDW. And apparently you stand by for Super Ninja Pirate Assassin Action. I have no idea what that means, but it sounds wacky.
Continue on.
Oh, you want me to go ahead and read this thing here?
Yeah, might as well.
All right. So, Revenge of the Fallen, prequel Defiance 4. How many titles do these prequels need? Well, IDW describes this issue. The explosive conclusion to the official prequel to this summer's Transformers Revenge of the Fallen film. With their forces united, the Decepticon army prepares to leave Cybertron on a mission of galactic conquest. But the Autobots and their leader, Optimus Prime, plan to do the unthinkable in order to defeat the increasingly powerful Megatron. So here's another description. IDW's last chance to pull one to pull one of its prequels out of the doldrums of mediocrity after the meh fest that Alliance turned out to be. There is still hope for Defiance. It's a good backstory, but with the Fallen poised to supplant Megatron as the Transformer movie versus past as well as future premier villain, it may be a good story that no one wants to hear. All right. Then you've got the Drift one, which is hot on the heels of this week's Spotlight Jazz comes Spotlight Drift. Adding characters is a good thing. Fans should be willing to accept change and expansion. However, confronting the fandom with Wolverine Lanvos, the super ninja former Decepticon, is not likely to be met with objective interest. I have no idea really what they're talking about because I don't read the comics, but that does just sound silly. IDW says, this month the spotlight falls on the newest Transformer in the universe, Drift, and you get to learn how he joined the Autobot cause and how he figured into the events unfolding in the pages of All Hail Megatron, guest starring the Wreckers, Cup, and Perceptor. And this spotlight had better be a rich character experience explaining why we should care about Drift and not just a super ninja slash fest. Otherwise, they might as well rename him Cliche. Here is hoping. All right.
Well, at least the writer of our articles are honest about her feelings.
No, absolutely. Yeah, the Wolverine thing. Just, oh, God. All right. We'll see where that goes.
Yeah. Well, for a complete review of the comic stuff, you can check out our previous episodes. And plus, also, the Moonbase 2 guys will probably go into death while the latest comics suck.
All right, then.
All right. Speaking of sucking, Simon Furman. No, I'm kidding. So Simon Furman talks about All Hail Megatron Coda. Dan's blog, Simon Furman, gave us our first hits of what expected to be IDW's upcoming All Hail Megatron. You know what? I can't read this now because I keep thinking there's a gun next to my head. And I should be reading this like a collection of short Transformer stories to bridge the gap between All Hail Megatron and an ongoing monthly Transformers comic. Mr. Furman reveals that this 11-page contribute. So I'm just going to back off and let you read this one too.
And I decry all imperialist American pig dogs and their way of doing things. Viva
Soviet rocking exploding will make way for grandiose new Soviet shopping mall.
Right.
Which will hopefully work better than American malls who are evil slime.
So just sign this confession and all will be well.
Exactly.
Anyway.
Why don't you reread that while I grab my tasty drink here?
So today on his blog, Simon Furman gave us our first hints of what's to be expected from IDW's upcoming All Hail Megatron Coda, a collection of short Transformers stories to bridge the gap between All Hail Megatron and an ongoing monthly Transformers comic. Furman reveals that an 11-page contribution of his to Coda will feature Ironhide and his relationship with Optimus Prime. And we have the full and complete article and whatnot, complete with all the lovely comments for you to read on the website as well.
Oh, wow. I was hoping you'd read that as well.
Oh, I can. That's fine. Not a problem. Mm-hmm. Simon Furman had this to say about his contribution. I said, so I got asked to do a story for IDW's post All Hail Megatron series, Coda. And a lot of fun I had with it, too. Without giving too much away, after all, it's only 11 pages, it revolves around the long-standing relationship-friendship between battle-scarred veteran soldier Ironhide and Autobot leader Optimus Prime. In a series of key flashbacks set within a contemporary framing, we explore the abrasive and often confrontational nature of these two legendary heroes and how that metamorphosed into mutual trust and respect. So let's just say that in current affairs, Ironhide has reached something of a crossroads in the story, and it sets the scene for some incredibly dramatic stuff to come. The first issue of All Hail Megatron Coda goes on sale in July. And if you want more details, we have a link to IDW's website for more goodness.
Yeah, supposedly that's supposed to wrap everything up and hopefully give, you know, what a lot of people are saying, some sort of, excuse me, point to the All Hail Megatron series.
Right on.
Which we'll probably be picking up in paperback. So.
Mm-hmm.
All righty, on to miscellaneous news. Transformers to be inducted into the Toy Fair Hall of Fame at Wizard World Philly. Hey, that's close by you, Jace.
Yeah, it's kind of across the state, but it's closer than it was to Columbus.
Yeah. Wizard Entertainment announced that they'll be inducting the Transformers toy line into their Toy Fair Hall of Fame in a ceremony held during this year's Wizard World Philadelphia. The second annual Hall of Fame Awards will be on Saturday, June 20th at 6 p.m. at the Pennsylvania Convention Center in Philadelphia. Hasbro has produced incredible Transformer action figures for both diehard fans and younger audiences, Wizard Entertainment publisher Gareb Shema said in a press release, and Hasbro Incorporated will graciously accept the award. Hasbro is honored to have its iconic Transformers line introduced into the Toy Fair Magazine Hall of Fame, said Transformers Global Brand Directing Greg Lombardo. So I'm looking at this thing. It's like big, you know, 3D, what would you call that? Crest shield. Second annual Toy Fair Hall of Fame Awards featuring Randy Bowen, Ted Bruckett, Jesse Falcon, and Transformers. The entire Transformers line. Holy cow, that's going to be huge. So we didn't need to tell everybody, the Transformers was awesome. You know, amazes me still today. I still run into people. They go, "Are they still making those?" I'm like, "Yes. Have you seen the movie?"
So, one of the longest running toy lines ever.
All right. So anyhow, Transformers Hall of Fame Awards. So congratulations to the entire line of Transformer toys, good, bad, or sucky, being inducted with a bunch of other guys that are really bad photo, really need to get some better headshots. Wow. Alrighty then. Moving
well,
on.
Well, I mean, historically, dude, you know, I mean, we can smell our own. Geeks do not photograph very well.
That's why a very, very good teacher told me, get your photos done when you're young, because all the famous painters got their portraits done when they were old, and obviously, you want it while you look young and vibracious, so get your stuff young and recycle those photos for the next 30 years.
Did you just say vibracious? You did.
I used a three-syllable word. Yay!
You mean vivacious. Anyway.
All right, moving on. Last thing is Greg Berger announced his first guest of BotCon 09, and Fun Publications has announced their first guest of BotCon 2009 is Greg Berger. Mr. Berger has voiced Generation 1 Grimlock, Skyfire, Longhaul, and Outback, and will be on hand for panels and to sign autographs. The organizer has posted the bio of the guest on the convention's website. So the voice of Grimlock will once again be at BotCon, as well as our good old friend Stan Bush will also be there performing. So go check that out and all your information. Okay, so while we're on BotCon, I have to say, due to budgetary restraints and the fact that I have to use my tax refund to buy a new furnace for my house, myself and Z Piper will not be attending BotCon this coming year.
Yeah.
Sad to say. However, the rest of the TFormers.com guys will be attending BotCon, and we will be working with them to get some, up to date information on the website, and probably do a couple of podcasts around that time, maybe a day-to-day thing, depending on what goes down. And we'll have more information as we get closer to BotCon, which is a little bit of a month away. But needless to say, just want to let you fans know that unfortunately we will not be there. So if you were looking for a meet and greet with us, then you're going to have to wait for a closer location because, unfortunately, Anthony has to buy a new furnace.
Unless one of our lovely listeners happens to be a frequent traveler or an employee of one of the major airlines and would love to throw some frequent flyer miles towards us because it's really just the price of the plane ticket that's preventing us from going. End shameless plug.
Thank you, sir. All righty. So following up on, we have listener email and questions and all that jazz. So I have an email here from Matthew from Shelby Township in Michigan. Hey, are there robots up there that transform and have a key? No. Okay, Transformers Alliance ends with Sideswipe, the three motorcycles and the ice cream truck joining the Autobots on Earth and them getting word of the Demolisher going on a rampage in Shanghai. How does this affect your expectations for the upcoming Revenge of the Fallen movie? Do you think it will open with the fight between the Autobots and Demolisher? I am guessing from what I've heard that we're going to get a action sequence with the Autobots and the U.S. military. I don't know. It could be Demolisher. What do you think, Jace?
I'm doubting it. Simply because, I mean, it doesn't take a whole lot of, you know, observation to realize that Devastator is the crown jewel of the movie. I mean, regardless of, you know, personality and whatnot, Devastator is – he's huge. You know, he's the big man in the – I mean, I'm not counting the Fallen. You know, he's the villain. But as Michael Bay said, you know, the creme de la smash or whatever. And that is not an opening scene thing. I mean,
well, what if it could be – it could be just the Demolisher robot himself. And then, you know, obviously Demolisher combines with the Constructicon, so maybe the combination sequence is safe for the end, but just his attack sequence is the beginning.
Oh, maybe. I could see that. Like, if they're wanting to do some personality stuff, maybe, like, Demolisher is a little cocky. You know, he goes out there and wants to whip a little tail and then eventually kind of gets beaten back. Not destroyed, but beaten back enough that he realizes that he needs help and, you know, goes and gets, you know, the other boys and then you got the big penultimate battle in the end. You know, I can buy that. Mm. But, yeah, I wasn't thinking Devastator was going to be in the beginning. But I could buy something along that line with Demolisher, sure.
It's either going to be an awesome movie with –
Sorry.
Sorry. I'm starting a lot today. I don't know why. It's either going to be a really, really good movie in terms of it'll be like the Wrath of Khan for us, like, you know, from back in the heyday, or it's going to be so overdone, it's going to be really bad. I don't see there being any gray scale in this movie. It's going to be either really awesome or really bad.
Right.
But once again, we're going to have to wait and see. So in terms of the comic, you know, once again, we don't read the comic, so I'm not sure if that would change the way we feel about the movie. Generally, what they've been doing a lot lately being the last 10 years is, you know, start with like the Matrix is putting in extra stuff between the movie. So if you do buy the extra, you know, comics or, you know, animation sequences and stuff, you have a little more background of stuff you see in the movie. So, you know, and that's, you know, one way to keep people going back to the movie and, you know, obviously keep the thing running between the 2 years that they have to produce the movie. So I don't think that, you know, seeing the comic, yeah, you get a little bit more information to it and leads you into stuff. I know watching the first cartoon of Clone Wars, it sort of led right into the third movie. So that was kind of cool. But it wouldn't be like if I didn't see that my experience of watching the movie is going to be ruined anyhow. So, all right, let's see. I don't think we have any more questions. We could go on a whole big talk about Micronauts, but I think that would just drive Z Piper crazy. We have our question of the week from Dual Mirrored Gridwork. And let me pull that up here real quick.
This next one is kind of relating to the whole, why are there female Cybertronians like RC, Moonracer, Alita 1, Chromia? I mean, what role do they really fill as far as your thoughts and concerns are about this? Because obviously Transformers don't reproduce like organic creatures, so I kind of wonder, other than what Simon Furman's kind of lead toward too with the RC Spotlight, what is your overall thoughts and opinions about this?
Did you hear that?
I did, yes.
Okay, I'll let you take that one then.
Really, to me, 100% marketing. Absolutely, you know, I wouldn't say there would be zero to do with lore, but to me, it's just, we didn't really have any female Transformers in the beginning, you know, because it was marketed as a boys' toy line. Mm-hmm. And then when they realized how, you know, popular it was becoming over here in America and whatnot, they did want to try to get, you know, maybe get a little bit across, you know, gender thing going there. So, and we want to relate, you know, it's like as a young boy, you know, we look at like, oh, these are guys and they're going out and they're doing guy things, but they just happen to be robots. And the same thing with the females, you know, they just wanted it there, I believe, as a marketing thing to try to draw in some women, you know, as the base is concerned. I mean, the only thing I could, and this is just me speculating, if they really wanted to try to add some canon to it, is, I mean, granted, you know, we know now how the Transformers were created, you know, or whatnot, but, you know, if there was like the, they wanted to, you know, make them kind of in their own image that, you know, they could, I mean, you get into the whole, you know, I don't want to like add religion to it or anything, but as far as, you know, oh, well, there, we have several forms that we can take and, you know, it's this one and this one. I don't know. You know, I'm kind of rambling right now because I don't want to, you know, screw with any existing canon. But to me, it really just has to do with marketing. I mean, to try to find an actual story related reason for it, I think you're just going to be frustrated.
Well, I think the reason why they add it is because they want to do the love story, you know, it's like, how else do you, well, I mean, how else in certain countries do you do a love story between two characters and that you're going to have a female character at some point. So if it's not about the humans, you got to have a female Autobot if you're going to do a love story. And that's why they introduced that one episode, because it was all about Optimus Prime's devotion for this particular female Autobot. So,
oh, yeah. I mean, because even though, yeah, they don't reproduce in the tradition, in the way that, you know, we're used to it, right. You know, yeah, you need some sort of interaction, because otherwise, if they were all androgynous, then we as the consumers who were looking at it just, you know, it doesn't really hold as much merit.
Well, there was that in that one particular episode, the way Optimus Prime saved Alita One, he did have a connection that strangely was interestingly close to her stomach. So, yeah. I mean, that's the biggest joke of all, of how that got past the censors. But, you know, I think that basically when they introduced the female Autobots is because they want to add an element of the female persuasion there, but also to create something to provide a love story for the Autobot characters. And that's primarily it. You know, it always amazes me when we saw the one animated episode where Grimlock and the Dinobots are going crazy over Black Arachnium. And it's like, well, why are they going crazy? Because they're in love with her. Well, how do you explain why they're in love to her, to a kid? That would be an awkward conversation. So,
yeah.
So it's one of those weird things where it's like, you know, once again, I don't write for cartoon shows, but I would think that you would want to do something else other than that. But primarily, if they include any sort of the female characters, it's primarily to have a love story. I think they just realized over the course of a couple, you know, 20, how many years? 25 years? 35 years?
25.
No, I think it's 35-year anniversary, isn't it?
84 plus 25.
Okay.
Equals.
Okay, so I'm sorry. Maybe 3-year anniversary, I'm thinking. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, so over the course of so many years, they basically have just realized that, hey, you know, these characters, even though they're female, the boys and the girls both seem to be taking a liking to them. And then maybe we can actually have a female character in the show and or movie and actually have a toy that people would buy. So,
yeah, marketing.
And, yeah. So, yeah. Go figure, marketing. So. But all right. Well, that's our discussion for this week, folks. And there you go. There's your fill of Transformer news. So once again, you can always go to the tformers.com community forums and give us your feedback on each show every week. You can also check up on what I just found is, you know, if you're a local-based you want to see where the latest sightings of toys are, you could go check out the sightings area and see, hey, this toy showed up in my local Toys R Us or Target, you know, or that place we also shop at that we don't care to talk about. So go check out the tformers.com forums. Very well done. And you could always send us an email at podcast@tformers.com, although quite honestly, you might as well just drop us a line in the forums as well. So other than that, this has been Iron High 1975.
And the Piper.
And you guys have a good week.
Aren't you getting a little carried away here? I'm still me. You're still you. Matrix. Matrix.
The TFormers.com podcast is copyright 2009 TFormers.com. Special thanks to the Cleveland band Gravity for use of their music. Go check them out. MySpace.com/Gravity33. Check out our forums and leave your feedback or send us an email at podcast@TFormers.com. This has been an E&I production, all rights reserved.